Homestyle Green, episode 205, from Zero Energy to Revolve Energy.
It's a completely different place now. It's really very exciting. And we're starting, I don't know, we're aware of a number of utility scale projects that are being explored. And the fact that utility scale solar can now compete in the wholesale electricity market is very exciting, I think, for New Zealand.
G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is a podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. Joe Woods and Shay Brazier have been saving money on power since they moved into their zero energy house about 7 years ago. And at the same time, their home has been drier, healthier and warmer in winter than most New Zealand houses. Now, through his new company Revolve Energy, Shay is continuing to help others achieve similar savings and benefits by looking into the feasibility of solar and energy efficiency technologies for building projects. I started out by asking Shay, how's it been living in the zero energy house?
It's over 7 years now, amazingly, which is hard to believe. We've got the milestone of our daughter, so she's six now. It's going really well. Still zero energy, if you exclude the car, even with the extra bodies.
Yeah. Because when you built it, it was just two of you, right?
That's right.
And so a couple of things there. Firstly, 7 years. A lot of people say that's the average time that people own a home and then move on.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Well, firstly, was there additional investment that you guys made? And if so, is that getting towards payback period for some of those extras?
We never really got around to looking at the full detailed payback on a lot of it.
Mm.
It'd be quite interesting to do that, particularly when you look at the kind of additional cost to have zero heating. Because to have a central heating system to achieve the sort of level of comfort that we have would be quite expensive, actually, to build.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that was a big saving, rather than an additional
extra saving. And you know, we don't have the capital cost or the ongoing operational cost, but we have the additional insulation and glazing. So we looked at the solar quite early on, after the first year.
Yep.
And we haven't had the same detailed look since then. But at the time, the savings in that first year were about the same as the mortgage cost to cover that part of the build.
Just in the first year?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's impressive.
That's the thing about simple payback. It doesn't tell you that, because simple payback says, well, if you invested cash, this is how long it takes to get that back. But we didn't invest cash. We borrowed money, which we have to pay back each year.
Yeah.
And interest rates have gone down since then. So, as have PV payback buyback rates, but I suspect.
Well, yeah. But how much have PV panel prices come down as well?
Oh, in 7 years, massively.
Yeah.
You know, I would say a third of the cost possibly now than they were.
So would you say to someone, if they were starting out, that a project like that would be even more achievable now than when you guys did it?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, there's more choice around building products, better quality building, better performing building products, I think. Solar's significantly cheaper. Power's more expensive. EVs are around. Batteries are starting to look interesting now, economically.
Yeah.
Only just, really. And at the time you think, oh, gee, 7 years is a long time. But it goes really fast.
Yeah, Especially when you throw some little people into the mix. So how many of you living in the house now?
There's four of us and a dog.
Right. And it's what's the total floor area?
It's the garage is 60, and the house is about 140. So right. About 200 all up if you count the garage.
Yeah. But the garage is excluded from the thermal envelope, right?
Yeah, we did actually build it to almost the same standard as the house.
Yeah.
But it's never quite performed as well as the house because it's a bit more leaky and it's got a high percentage of glazing.
Right.
But it's like, the garage is warmer than some people's houses, I think.
And how is that size for a four-person family?
I'll just wait for this car to get faster. How's it sized for a four-person family in terms of the, is it big enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's perfect. We've got three bedrooms upstairs, and a bathroom and an ensuite, and then downstairs we've got open plan living and a laundry utility area with a toilet, so it's great.
Yeah.
Don't have two living spaces per se, but we've got, you know, generous bedrooms upstairs and we've kind of got a living space upstairs, I suppose. So it's yeah, meets our needs. It's great.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want it bigger, I don't think.
You wouldn't?
No.
So that project was kind of the genesis of where you went next, wasn't it? Because Matt was working on it, and then there was lots of media interest. And did that just kind of flow into the next kind of chapter for you guys?
Yeah. So we worked with Matt during the build to build the website and get some funding, make those videos, and kind of get the word out there about it. Because mostly because we just wanted to see what would happen if we share that information, if that might be a way that we could influence the market for mm-hmm. what we were doing. And that led on to the realization there was opportunity combining that sort of communications marketing angle with the engineering angle that I brought. So
yep.
Matt. And that led to Evident.
Yep.
And we did some great work through Evident. We probably one of the most interesting projects was our involvement in Camp Glenorchy.
Yeah.
Which is a zero energy tourist accommodation facility down in Glenorchy, and it's really hit its straps this year. It's won a couple of awards, won the best KNX award, so it's a building automation product from Germany. Mm-hmm. Won the best commercial KNX project last year. It won the most innovative project this year at the CNs Awards.
Awesome.
Our work combined with the work that PowerSmart has done with the battery and the solar. Got listed as a top 100 place to stay in the world in Time magazine.
Wow, top 100 places to stay.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, it's a pretty fantastic place. We did an interview with Trish a few episodes ago, a while ago now, mm-hmm. Talking about the whole project, and it's quite the undertaking.
Yeah, it's incredibly holistic and really aspirational, and it shows. Like, it's an amazing place to stay.
Mm-hmm. So you were involved quite a lot with the energy side of that, and doing the analysis and the scoping of all of the energy generation systems?
So I did help with the battery and the PV. We worked out how big they needed to be, worked with Trish on the energy budget, and we ended up being the control system integrator on the project. So through that role, we got involved in looking at every single system, basically, how that could interact, how it would perform to meet the objective of using 50% less energy,
right.
50% less water.
Yeah.
So we got right across all of those systems and influenced how they were specified and how they worked, mm-hmm. and then designed the control system that controlled at a high level all of those and monitored how they were all working. So there's something like 2,000 data points coming out of that project.
Wow.
You know, electricity use on subcircuits, water use, thermal energy from the ground source heat pumps, CO2 in the spaces,
mm-hmm.
all that type of information. So there's a huge data set being generated, which could be quite interesting, I think, in the future as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And how did you go from that to Revolve?
Yeah, so that... How do we go to Revolve? I learned through that the value of the approach we were taking with the kind of holistic view of energy and systems and buildings and the benefits mm-hmm. that could come from that. And so Matt and I decided to head separate directions. Matt started SUST.
Yep.
So I don't know if you talked to him about that. So it's a platform to promote high-performance buildings and
yes. yep.
connect people and projects and products. And I'm focusing more on trying to get these type of systems into the market at scale.
Yep.
So we have been doing some residential projects, but we're starting to focus more and more now on multi-unit residential, I guess you'd call them mini-grids. So the technology behind the meter how you can use that, where you combine multiple technologies together to get the kind of co-benefit of those technologies,
yep,
those properties. So an example might be central hot water heating, a single PV system, shared battery and EV charging, and how you can use those together to maximize the use of on-site generation, so avoid buying power, make the PV more valuable by not selling it at a low price, buying at scale so you get the cost of systems down, and you know, being able to afford to invest in, you know, central efficient hot water heating system rather than lots of small, less efficient hot water systems.
So it sounds like with these systems, there's a sweet spot in between a national grid and an individual dwelling. Are you sort of trying to find where that space is, where it makes sense to have some local scale?
Yeah, that's definitely the focus, is what makes sense in that space, and how can we maximise the collective power that we have in those slightly larger than individual home dwellings.
Yeah.
Because it does make sense on an individual space, but it's harder to make it make sense, I think. And if we can combine those resources, I think there's some wins there, where we can come up with better models.
What are the main reasons why it's hard for making it make sense at an individual level?
I suppose to say it's hard is perhaps the wrong word. It's I guess for an individual home, if you buy a 4 kilowatt system per watt, it's not going to be the same price as buying a 50 kilowatt system.
Right. So there's a scale of bringing down the price.
Yeah, so scale of bringing down the capital cost,
mm-hmm,
per unit of capacity, definitely. The fact that you've got diversity in your load, so while you might have a 4 kilowatt system on your home, a good chunk of that's going to be exported probably. But if you're behind a meter and there's other people who might be home during the day, collectively you might be able to use a higher percentage of the power on the property.
Right. So it's a time of use issue as well.
Yeah. And then you can put in control systems, and we've done some pretty complex projects on residential where we put in control systems to control when your hot water's running and your EV's charging, to try and maximise that solar. But the cost of that gets reasonably significant in a small project.
Yeah.
But you can do the same thing in a big project for not, you know, if it's 10 times as many buildings, it's not 10 times the cost.
Yeah.
That, so you can, you know, have one system, hot water system, and one EV charger that you can control, and the actual infrastructure to do that is not that much more expensive than an individual house.
Yeah.
So it's there's some benefit there as well. And then I think as well, the other thing that's starting to become apparent is you've got greater buying power to the utility,
mm-hmm,
and you can afford to spend more time getting the best price for your electricity and getting the best tariff in place. So it's, I think there's some, you know, collective buying power to the grid as well.
Sure. I mean, I can definitely see the engineering and energy efficiency benefits. What about pricing and ownership of assets, those sorts of things? Because the market's very much geared to, I own the stuff that's on my house and I pay for what I use. Are there mechanisms in place for a more shared market?
Yeah, we're exploring a few different models. One of the projects we're working on is a co-house project, so that they're perfectly positioned to benefit from this because they've already got a co-ownership model established for shared assets.
Yep.
So they collectively would own this equipment and collectively benefit from it.
Yeah.
There are situations in a number of residential multi-unit buildings already where a third party, say the body corporate, might own the central plant,
mm-hmm,
and distribute the benefit or on-sell the benefit to the tenants, depending on how it's structured.
Right.
Or it could be an entirely independent third party that might own and operate it, and there's enough margin that they can afford to do that, still save the customer money, and mean that they don't have to invest up front their own capital to get this efficient equipment.
And is sorting all that out part of your offering at Revolve? Is that the type of stuff that you help out with as well?
Yeah, we play a role in that process, absolutely.
Where does New Zealand's and I guess Australia as well, where do we sit currently globally in both the technology but also some of the market mechanisms and the adoption of these types of systems?
I think we're following, I think.
Right.
We do have some fairly innovative companies, though, in the space, I think, that are pushing the boundaries, mm-hmm. although not perhaps at the scale as we're seeing overseas. So there's some interesting companies on the grid side looking at, you know, different types of grid offerings in places like Ragland, where they're trying to have a power share scheme, the P2 Power initiative quite some time ago. Things like that, and then, but on the microgrid side, we're not really seeing a lot here right now. But there's a lot of talk about it overseas. So I think we can learn a lot from what's happening overseas, but we need to be conscious of our own unique characteristics here.
Yeah, because it would seem, speaking for New Zealand, where the industry's shaping up for a bit of a shake-up because of the long, skinny nature of our national grid, and if Tihoi, if the smelter shuts down, then that changes the flows, and then we've got deregulation of the whole market. It's kind of set for a bit of a shake-up. So could that leave the door a bit more open for some innovation in that space?
Yeah, I think so. I think the other thing which we're seeing or forecast is, well, Transpower had a report that's suggesting by 2050 we're going to have between 50 and 100% more electricity consumption. So we've got a huge amount of new generation that needs to be built. And I think, as you've alluded to, we've got capacity constraints and moving energy around the country, so mm-hmm. more light generation would be beneficial. And we probably are limited to what we can build in terms of central generation. It'd be quite difficult to build more hydro right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's quite a lot of geothermal and wind, I understand, that's been already consented and not built, so we'll probably see that starting to roll out.
From what you've seen in the market, the projects that you're working on, do you agree with that prediction of, I mean, that's like an incredible increase in energy demand?
Yeah, I haven't really looked at all the assumptions behind that in detail, but I can see that the population is growing, we're shifting a lot of industry to electricity, or would like to, aspirationally.
Right.
And electric vehicles as well contribute towards that too. So,
So that's not necessarily that dramatic increase in energy use. It's a shift towards electricity specifically.
Yeah, it's electricity use.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct. Not energy. So, yeah, some of that is a shift from fossil fuels to electricity.
Yeah, interesting. So coming back to Camp Glenorchy, you use some existing technologies and protocols in that, but you also developed quite a lot of stuff on the fly and from the ground up, by the looks of it. You had some university students basically creating stuff specifically for that project, didn't you?
Yeah, we try as much as we could to build on existing technology.
Yeah.
And a lot of the hardware is existing off the shelf, but quite a lot of work to customize the logic that goes into operating things.
Yeah.
So we built, for example, custom interface to the property management system. So we knew the control system knew when there was a booking, which room was going to be booked and how far away that was. So we could automatically turn on that room, heat up the hot water, heat up the room.
Right.
And avoid using power otherwise.
Yep.
We built custom dashboards for the monitoring interface, and quite a lot of experimentation just to prove these technologies were going to work before they put them in. So yep. We worked closely with a mechanical contractor on how the mechanical system worked, how the thermal store, stratified thermal store worked. We logged it and validated the COPs and the heat pumps we were achieving, and looked at the ground temperatures and ran the bore for a year to make sure that ground source heat pump was going to work well.
Yeah.
So quite a lot of work like that, and it was really made possible by the client, who's yep. you know, very visionary, pushed the team and enabled them by setting up the right team and funding them to do the work.
So those interfaces, were they not in existence? There was nothing like it in the market that was an off-the-shelf solution for that type of building?
There are off-the-shelf solutions, but to a large extent, they are quite siloed.
Right.
So you do have to have a level of customization to get them to work together across the whole site. And I think that's probably where it's really unique is how holistic and broad the control system is.
Yep.
To interface with all these things, and it takes time to go through all those systems and work out what that strategy is and how to communicate with them all.
Right.
And the next stage of that now is actually now looking at outwards from the property, how we interact with the local grid.
Yep.
So the battery that was installed by PowerSmart recently will allow that site to operate as a mini grid, entirely off grid if need be.
Oh, wow.
It'll operate as much as it can to maximise use of on-site generation, avoid buying power or selling power to the grid using the battery.
Yeah.
But if the grid drops out, then it'll run the site off the battery with the solar, and if it has to, it'll use a generator. But we monitor the battery and try and reduce load if we start seeing the battery capacity declining or the stored energy being reduced.
Yeah, yeah.
But now we're looking, so how can we use that system to help support the Glenorchy grid?
Oh, really?
So we can respond to simple things like demand, control period demand charges. So we get a signal, there's a constraint, we'll stop using any power from the grid if we happen to be at the time. And we're exploring now actively with the lines company what information they could provide us and what we would do in response to that to help support the grid. So voltage support or providing reactive power to the grid. Things like that.
That's interesting because typically lines companies are essentially they own the stuff and they make the rules and they don't really like people doing things on their network that they don't know about. So, but it sounds like you've had quite a lot of communication and innovation with them.
Yeah, it's the start of the process, really. But I think they're quite excited about it as well because particularly Glenorchy, it's quite a difficult part of the network.
Yeah.
It's a long way down a long line from Queenstown.
Absolutely.
So it has a lot of those characteristics that make a grid difficult to manage and operate reliably.
And that's scalable to other networks as well if you offer that type of integrated solution where it's responding to demands on the network in a live but also safe way. And I know that's one of the problems with that they've got to get their heads around with distributed generation is that if there is stuff going on the lines, they need to know about that because they can't have people generating power off solar panels and zapping people who happen to be working on lines at that time. They still need to know what's going on their grid.
Mm, but that's true. And interestingly, though, at the CN's conference last week, there was discussion around the release of the new grid connection standard for inverters.
Right.
And originally it was like, if it falls outside of this range, just turn the inverter off. And now they've got more adaptive range of response. So if it is time-based, so if it's under voltage for more than this long, then turn it off, but try not to so you can help support the grid.
Right.
But they're now talking now, and then don't connect again for another minute, but they are talking now about changing entirely so the inverter never comes off the grid. It just reduces its power output to zero so that it can instantaneously start to respond and help supporting the grid. So increasingly they're seeing these systems as part of the grid and accepting the distributed, perhaps uncontrollable in a sense, nature of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, not controllable in the same kind of command and control sense that used to be deployed.
Yeah.
The networks. So
that's exciting. It's interesting to see that industry responding to that. I mean, it's kind of obvious they need to get ready for it because it is coming, but it's interesting to hear about the level of detail that they're thinking about. Hey, just quickly, KNX, what is that for people that have never heard of it? What's that all about?
Yeah, so KNX is a building control protocol, communications protocol. So it's a standardized way for one piece of equipment to talk to another piece of equipment automatically. So you probably heard the term proprietary. So but there's a lot of proprietary systems out there that are designed to talk within themselves, but they won't communicate with other products.
Right.
So if you've got a system from that manufacturer, you can't add a device from another manufacturer and get it to work as part of that system.
Yeah.
So what KNX has done is established a protocol that anybody can use. And in the last 20 years, has gone from a few manufacturers to over 400 manufacturers making 9,000 different products that all talk the same language. Right. So in one project, you can have any KNX product, and it could talk to any of the other KNX products, and you program it through a single interface. So it means that it's quite easy to have a single interface that you can control all the systems in your building.
Yep.
And also, for example, like a motion sensor could send a signal to the lighting, to the HVAC system, and can also be part of the security alarm system.
Right.
Rather than, you know, different sensors for each of those systems.
Yeah.
Or you could have a simple signal to say, hey, the building's now in hibernation mode, and they all can be programmed to respond to that signal, but it's one signal that's sent out on a common communication bus.
So has KNX kind of emerged now as the dominant protocol for all that type of automation?
It's getting a lot of traction in a lot of markets. It's very strong in Europe, particularly Germany, where it started. It's a very strong interest to me in China. Mm-hmm. Getting a lot of traction now in New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah.
Starting to be talked about as a protocol that the states might start to look at.
Right.
So yeah. I think it's got the legs really to be that protocol.
Yeah.
It's now adopted as a not a standard in New Zealand. There were some political reasons why that didn't happen, but I think a technical specification for New Zealand and Australia.
Right. Yeah. Cool. So where to from here for Revolve? What's who's your ideal client, first of all? Who do you work mostly with or want to be working with?
That's a good question. I think we tend to work a little bit at the edge.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're wanting to work with people who know it's possible and want to move beyond just the standard business as usual approach.
Yep.
Whether that's residential, ideally larger scale residential.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like if anyone's planning a multi-unit or, especially a co-housing type project, then it'd be ideal to come and have a chat with you about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it also applies to sort of other commercial projects as well, where there's multi-tenants, multi-tenanted commercial. And we're also doing quite a lot of work now in the traditional work I did, way back 10, 12 years ago, which was more traditional maybe for me, was just PV system feasibility and specification.
Right.
Working in the commercial space now, just helping commercial clients understand, does it make sense now to put solar on an economic basis?
Yeah, that's a good point, because they might have thought about that 10 years ago, got the big no, it didn't make sense, but things have changed since then, so it would be good to maybe revisit a lot of those situations and see how it stacks up now.
Yeah, and it's a completely different place now. It's really very exciting. Mm. And we're aware of a number of utility scale projects that are being explored. And the fact that utility scale solar can now compete in the wholesale electricity market is very exciting, I think, for New Zealand.
And would that be the case for retrofitting into existing buildings as well? You're not only looking at new buildings?
Yes. Yeah, quite possibly. Not in all cases, but certainly in some cases where depending on the cost to install the system and the price of power at that property, absolutely. And I think you'll see some exciting announcements this year in that space.
Awesome. Good. Yeah. And you've done some pretty cool stuff in other remote locations as well, haven't you, with some islands, Rarotonga and Roll Island?
Yeah, there's a couple on the website from, we're a little bit behind on adding all our projects, but there's a couple from quite some time ago that we did in Rau Island, some work we've done in the Cook Islands.
Awesome.
On remote off-grid, mini-grid.
Yeah.
And the one in Rarotonga was a utility scale megawatt connected onto the diesel grid up there.
Right. Yeah.
It's quite a broad,
awesome.
Broad range of projects over the years.
So where's a good place, where's the best place for people to get in touch with you, Shane, if they want to find out some more?
Oh, probably the easiest thing is just to look up the website, revolveenergy.co, and just send us a message via the contact page there.
Awesome. Hey, well, thank you for taking the time to chat. It sounds like you're doing some really exciting stuff, and in some ways I think it's even more exciting that there's so much in that space that that you can split it off and focus now on just that energy stuff, because there's a lot to sort out and help change the industry.
Yeah, that's a really exciting time, I think, for the industry as a whole. So, yeah, looking forward to the next few years.
Yeah, well, keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thanks for taking time to talk.
And that was Shay Brazier for his second appearance on the Homestyle Green podcast, this time as founder of Revolve Energy. And definitely encourage you to check out their website and have a look at some of the projects that he has been involved in and continuing to do awesome work in that area. If you've got any questions about feasibility of solar or energy efficiency projects, then definitely reach out to Shay. Put the contact details in the show notes, but otherwise you can just go to revolveenergy.co. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh. Thank you for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live.